The opinions expressed on Inside the Black Box do not reflect those of WREK Radio or the Georgia Institute of Technology. Welcome to Inside the Black Box, a weekly program on science and technology, or as we like to think of it, science, only funnier. I'm Pete Ledovitz, and as always, I'm joined by my ever-effervescent co-host, a man whose stand-up comedy has popularized the seven dirty words you can never say in a lecture on digital signal analysis, Bill Hunt.
How you doing?
Is that really true? Are there seven dirty words you can't say?
I'm incredibly clean. Comic when I do comedy, you know that.
I mean, look, the whole reason we have a delay in the studio is you.
Yeah, that's true.
Luckily, you're not the only one that has forced us to use it.
That is true. Yeah, they don't ask me to go do comedy for the grade school kids anymore. That didn't work out.
So what you're saying is children's parties are right out for you.
Yeah. I'd like to share something. I had a doctor's appointment this morning. I went to have a stress test.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was just going to lay down. They were going to tell me the IRS was auditing me or Dick Cheney was going to be the next president.
Your health insurance
expired. I actually had to run.
Yes,
in the stress test. So.
Are you saying you're on the verge of collapsing here in the studio?
No. I thought it was going to be something different. You know, like Dick Cheney president in 2012 or stuff like. You know, really scary, stressful stuff. But go ahead.
So you survived the stress test because it was simply physical exertion.
Yeah.
All right. Let's jump right into our topic. The topic today is women, science, and technology. And joining us in the studio today are the co-directors of the Georgia Tech Women, Science, and Technology Program, Carol Colatrella, Mary Frank Fox, and Mary Lynn Ralph. Our three guests today are co-directors of that center, and they're also involved in the National Science Foundation-supported advanced program here at Georgia Tech. Carol Colatrella received her PhD in comparative literature at Rutgers University, and nonetheless decided to join this geek fest we call Georgia Tech. She's on the Literature, Communication, and Culture School faculty here at Georgia Tech. Mary Frank Fox received her PhD in sociology from the University of Michigan, and again decided to join this nerd fest called Georgia Tech. And she's a member of the faculty in the School of Public Policy at Georgia Tech. And Mary Lynn Ralph is a nerd, because I know that we overlapped for a little bit when I was in graduate school at MIT, where she received her PhD in mechanical engineering and polymer science and technology. She's on the faculty in the School of Polymer and Textile Fiber Engineering, soon to merge with the Material Science and Engineering School. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And today we're going to talk about anything and everything having to do with women in science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and where we've gone so far, which is really good, and where we still have to go. So, ladies, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Can I say that? Can I say ladies without people turning on me like a pack of dingoes in the parking lot?
Yes.
Okay, because I say gentlemen and ladies. What is the accepted term?
I think you should not use the term broads, which is what you usually.
That would not be really good. Chicks.
Don't.
Okay, so we don't normally use broad or
I'm just
or
kidding.
Chicks. And we don't normally resort to. There's a comedian from New York that I know that if you really want to do some crowd work and get assertive, intelligent women ticked off in the crowd, so you can use that to step up the humor. His favorite thing is he looks at some woman who's obviously very intelligent and sort of right in the front row and says, lady, quiet, please. The men are talking. And, you know, that's a whole hour
that
of comedy
well.
After she throws a drink in his face.
Yeah.
So let's actually start with an article I saw. I actually got this email to me by my good friend Billy Pendleton Parker here, who's in charge of the President's Scholar Program. I did not see it in the New York Times. I think it was only on the online part of the New York Times. But let's begin the program, as we often do, with a segment we call
Science in the News.
And today's Science in the News article comes from the April 26th edition of the New York Times. I couldn't hear it. I don't have headphones on. Was it? Were people freaking out at our liner?
Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely.
Okay, continue.
By Dennis Overby, who, by the way, writes a lot for the Tuesday Science Times section of the New York Times, entitled Exploring the Complexities of Nerdiness for Laughs. Dateline Burbank, California. Shudders and groans went around the blogs and coffee rooms of the physics world back in the summer of 2007 when CBS announced plans for a new comedy series about a pair of nerdy physicists and their buxom blonde waitress neighbor. And actually, this was sort of the brainchild of Chuck Lorre and Bill Prady, the show's producers, who were having we're having for a new program about a young woman out on her own. Mr. Pretty started reminiscing about people he had known during his own days as a computer programmer in New York, like the guy who could do complicated mathematical conversions in his head. And so the Big Bang Theory was born. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of an interesting thing. It's extremely popular among nerdy folks like myself. Bill, do you watch it?
No, we watch Chuck.
Oh, I watch Chuck, too.
Yeah.
Chuck, too, is a very similar thing. But actually, mm-hmm. I think Chuck does reinforce gender stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm going to go into that one.
Yeah.
But what's funny is a lot of people don't like it. 3 years later, some scientists still say that although the series The Big Bang Theory, Monday nights on CBS, is funny and scientifically accurate, which it is, by the way. I'm mm-hmm. always checking those formulas on the little whiteboards in their apartments. They're put off by it. Makes me cringe, says Bruce Margan, an astrophysicist at the University of California, Santa Cruz, explaining the terrible stereotyping of the nerd plus the dumb blonde are steps backwards for science literacy. So I know two out of our three guests watch it. Is it a step back? Is there anything redeeming from this? Or is this just something that's so nerdy that only guys can appreciate that? And I'm actually taking that from our Wednesday, August 6th program in 2008, when Karen Panetta, of the Electrical Engineering Department at Tufts University, who founded the Nerd Girls Project, said, well, she at least implied that some things are just so geeky, only guys appreciate them. But you guys watch it. Ladies, what do you think of The Big Bang Theory?
Well, I watch it. I like it. It's funny. The characters are, in some ways, caricatures. But the show itself does point out the continuing pervasive discrimination and stereotypes against women in science, but women in general. Mm-hmm. I think it does it in an amusing way so that the characters, the mostly men who are represented, do have these moments where they realize, oh, buxom blonde waitress is not as stupid as she seems. And
right.
Also that they have needs and urges that make them want to get along in the physical world, in the social world, and she's always teaching them in that way. Very similar to the show Home Improvement, where Tim Allen always got his comeuppance at the end.
Exactly.
But in a very soft way, right?
Okay, and I want to applaud that. Needs and urges. She said that very politically correct, Bill. You could take a lesson.
From that. I took notes.
He's
needs and urges.
Going for the cheap, dirty jokes.
No, I might actually describe what those urges and needs were. See, that's the problem. I should just...
In graphic detail, much to the chagrin of the FCC.
Leave it kind of out there in the ether.
Well, so it's very interesting. The scientific advisor, David Salzberg, who's a particle physicist at UCLA, who I sent an email to last night trying to get him on the program, because we have been trying to get the actors on the program for quite some time. CBS claims they've forwarded our request to their respective publicists, but hopefully we'll get
to the point where I think they've now got a restraining order against
Pete.
That's how aggressive he's been at trying to get them on the show. Yeah.
But Dr. Salzberg blogs about the activities of the show, and he said many people who grouse at him about the show have not seen very much of it. And his comments were echoed by Mr. Prady, and Prady is one of the co-producers of the show, who rejects the notion that the show stereotypes women. Far from being a dumb blonde, Penny has demonstrated time and time again that she possesses above-average intelligence and practical knowledge that often far exceeds that of the guys. And there are two very strong scientific characters that have been introduced more recently. One is Bernadette, the girlfriend of Howard Wolowitz, who's the engineer. And the other is, the physicist Leslie Winkle, who's every bit as intelligent and scientifically capable. But here's an interesting thing. What Karen from Tufts seemed to suggest is that unlike men in science and engineering, women in science and engineering can actually multitask. They can do the math, science, and engineering every bit as well, if not better than men. But at the same time, they can dress themselves in colors that match before they walk out the door. Is that any comment on that? I would claim women are better because they can actually live a normal life and do science and engineering. Whereas what this show demonstrates is many people, much like Bill and myself, mm-hmm. cannot.
I haven't seen this program, but I'm going to be looking for this program. I'm interested now that I hear about it. And I think that what may be important is whether the women characters are part of the inclusive environment in the settings in which these characters are operating and acting and being and doing, if they come in from the margins and kind of stay on the margins, or if they really actually move to center and are part of the inner workings of the operation. If the women are, then I don't think it matters that their hair is blonde or any other color. It's what they're depicted as doing and thinking and being, and if it's important. And in response to the question, can women do more when they're in science? I think possibly the answer is yes. There is data that suggests that underrepresented groups, and women have been part of the underrepresented group in science and engineering, have to perform not only as high as the majority group, but oftentimes higher. And that would be not just in science, but in a range of capacities around it. So I think quite possibly the answer is yes.
Well, I think you ask about multitasking and women's ability to multitask, I guess, versus men's ability. And Mary's done a lot of research in the partnerships that people have as women and men who are in science and technology. And a lot of times some people will say, or women will say, I wish I had a wife. Because if you look at who's married to who in science and technology, Mary, do you want to just briefly tell us the numbers there?
Sure. Among practicing scientists who have PhDs, women are less likely than men to be married. But of those women who are married, 60 to 80% are married to another scientist in or out of academia.
But for the men?
But for the men, no.
What does that mean?
What do you mean, no? Like, not married,
they're married to someone who's not a scientist.
They're married to someone who's... men are more likely to be married than women are in science. But the women who are married are far more likely to be married to another scientist, an academic scientist or a non-academic scientist.
Well, I think part of... I mean, I don't know the details, but, I mean, it's just difficult for men to be married to somebody who has higher stature than them or makes more money. And I'm not saying that's the way it should be, but I think it, you know, you've got that of whether or not other people are going to.
And then the male ego rears its ugly head.
I'm not saying that's the way it should be. I just think that's probably why you have a lower percentage of.
Right. Whereas I'm dumber than my wife, and that's probably true, and she reminds me of that every day. Yeah. I can't really argue with it.
I know your wife. It is true.
There you go. Right. You've got two dead wives. But that's a very interesting point because
But if you look at the traditional roles that women play in the household, those have not changed a huge amount.
Yeah, not as much.
And yet more women
except
are...
in my house.
And in my house as well. Yeah. And you know my husband.
Yes. Yeah, that was Mary Lynn Ralph commenting about Mary Frank Fox's work on this subject. But Mary Lynn Ralph is married to Matthew Ralph, who's two doors down from me in the School of Chemical Engineering. He's been on the program before talking about enterprise servers and things like that. And I know you do not have a traditional marriage. And this wrinkled shirt speaks to the fact that I iron all my own clothes in my house. I mean, my wife, she's like, look, I work too. You iron your own stuff. And she irons her stuff as well.
That explains a great deal.
Yeah, look, you know, at least I got the big wrinkles out of it. That's all I'm going for.
We don't iron.
Okay.
Lands in no iron shirts.
Yeah.
Those are our friends.
Yeah. I only iron them when they're... I like cotton, so I do have to iron that. In fact, my wife buys more rayon and similar stuff that she doesn't have to iron because, like I said, she's smarter than I am.
And you can learn about all those polymers in our school.
There you go.
Very good. And a plug for our major here.
By the way, with respect to being smart, if we put any belief in IQ scores, and they leave something to be desired, but we can say that they're measuring some sort of ability, the IQ scores of scientists are high compared with the general population, compared with other occupational groups. But guess what? Women's IQ scores are even higher than men's.
Yeah. Is it across the board or in science?
In science.
Well, it's interesting.
In scientific fields, the women who are in science have even higher measured ability than the men are in science. It makes sense. It's just there's more selectivity along the way. It's a more selective group. The women who have persisted and are still in science have overcome numbers of barriers, both of their own selection into the fields and of the selection of institutions of them. So in some sense, they're more likely to be survivors.
And on average, I find that very believable. And in fact, they say that the gap between women going into science and men is closing, whereas the gap, at least I was told yesterday by one of my colleagues, that that women already are ahead of men in terms of reading literature, writing, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. That's actually widening. Plus, more women are going to college. There's a huge abundance of women. In fact, it's so big that the sociologists are now looking at the fact that you have liberal arts university with 60-65% women. And in fact, that's the only saving grace of a big engineering and science school, is that you actually have a few men hanging around on this side. So it's changing. But my question is, let's talk about the program, Women, Science, and Technology. Why is this necessary? What is it doing? What is it trying to address in what we talked about just in the last few minutes?
The Center for the Study of Women, Science, and Technology, known as WIST, W-S-T, is important because it connects faculty and students who are committed to improving the representation of women in science and engineering, and it supports initiatives both for the advancement of faculty and for the advancement of students. And you know what? We see those as going together. We see this as a collaborative advancement, that what's good for faculty is good for students. If you have more faculty, women faculty in science and engineering, it supports the recruitment and retention and degree granting of the women in the fields as students as well. And in the key features, Women Science and Technology Center is truly interdisciplinary. It's cooperative in partnerships with students, and it is collaborative across all units at Georgia Tech. And I think that Georgia Tech is the ideal place for this.
Right, and it consists of a number of different initiatives. There's the research center that connects faculty interested in research and that puts together programs, research panels of faculty largely, guest lectures, and then research partnerships of faculty and students. But it also encourages career development for the students. We sponsor a minor in Women, Science, and Technology, which is a cross-unit minor in Ivan Allen College, and we also sponsor a network of students along with housing. We sponsor a learning community. We were the first learning community on campus, founded in 2000 with only 7 students, but quickly built up over 2 years to where we're about 50 students in Stein and Golden houses. And those students are interested in research. They're interested in career development activities, working on career strategies, resume writing, knowing about options for internships, study abroad. They're very forward-thinking, and they get to meet a wide variety of women and men on campus, as well as off, including employers and alums who come back and talk about their work experience. But what's most important is the informal contact of students and faculty that WIST facilitates, to come back to Mary's point about how advancing faculty interests is really advancing student interests too.
So those two go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And relatedly, the Women's Science and Technology program organized and undertook the first faculty undergraduate student research program on campus. Partnerships between faculty and undergraduate students undertaking research on women, science, and technology with funds, hourly funds supported for the student. That was actually a model for the president's undergraduate research.
Right, which is now extremely common. Everybody mm-hmm. does research with undergraduates, and I think all the educational mm-hmm. folks realize how important that is.
And I think mm-hmm. that brings to the front a point that when I was first involved in WIST, I sort of didn't actually want to be involved because I didn't think we needed some special program for women. And why should we have this exclusive program, right,
mm-hmm.
which some people think about? So the thing was, I looked at, because I am a nerd, as you pointed out before, I looked at the data, and actually when you look at the research, it shows that if you make it better for an underrepresented group, whether that's women or ethnic minority or whatever it is, if you make it better for women, it actually makes it better for everybody. And so by improving the situation for students, it helps faculty. By improving the situation for women, it helps the male students as well. It helps the male faculty. And so when I saw that, I'm like, oh, well, this is great. Because, and with everything that we've done with WIST, we're not excluding men from any of our events that we have. Right. But we do target the women. And we do look at the needs of women to design the things that we're doing. We don't have male students living in the women's dorm. That's sort of where
obvious
we drew a line. But
there
would be an issue there. but in all our programs, we include male and female speakers. We include male and female students and faculty. And
we give an award each year, the Distinguished Lecturer Award. And those awards have gone to both men and women leaders in women's science and technology, including Norman Fortenberry, who has a center at the National Academy of Engineering, J. Scott Long, who is Chancellor's Professor and Vice President for Research at Indiana University, Yu Shia, who is a member of the National Academy of Sciences and is at the Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan, and Alan Fisher, who is past Associate Dean of Computing at Carnegie Mellon. We've also given the award to a number of distinguished women, of course, but to make the point that Mary Lynn is emphasizing, its WIST is inclusive. It's targeted to women because women have some particular needs, but it benefits all.
So we're talking with the co-directors of the Women's Science and Technology Program here at Georgia Tech on Inside the Black Box. If you've got a question or comment about women and their role in science and technology, give us a call here at the studio at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468. I couldn't agree more that by making things better for women or any underrepresented group, that's good for everyone. Can you guys give us an example of how that might work?
Well, let me kind of chime in a little bit here. So, and this is with no research and just sort of my own exposure, but, you know, when, I graduated from high school in 1972, and the math and the science, there was not very much description of what it was good for or any engineering, what are you going to use physics for and all that. And it was mostly the boys, or few of the boys, not all the boys, but, you know, it was mostly boys that would still hang in there, even though there was no indication of what this would be good for. And I certainly think bringing more of those engineering constructs into the classroom earlier, and everybody goes, that's why my...
explain to people why it's good.
Yeah, that's what's going on with the gelling things in your shoes or a guitar or whatever. Yeah. I think that really helps everybody connect. And so, I think, again, it's anecdotal, but, I mean, there were, zero physics majors at Alabama when I was there, or double E majors when I was there. And I think at least part of it was there was not any exposure to what this was good for.
Right, right.
At an early age. I mean, later on you go, the space program, or that's what I could do. But
so is that illustrative, or are there other examples?
Well, I think that's an excellent example, because women studies show often, and a particular study at Carnegie Mellon that Alan Fisher and Jay Margolis did showed that one of the reasons women were turned off by computing was that they didn't understand the social impact and the social influences related to computing.
Okay.
And I think when they changed their curriculum at Carnegie Mellon in the ways that Bill was suggesting to reflect those issues, it became more of interest to women who stuck with it. So it is a retention issue, and it's an important issue that's related not just to how the society of science, technology, engineering, mathematics functions, but the interplay between society and STEM disciplines.
And it helps science.
Mm-hmm.
It helps science. If there
different perspectives.
Right. If there are different perspectives, it helps science. And if there's an emphasis on what's useful here, why is it important to know this? Why does it make a difference to know this? And there's broader understanding of that and broader appreciation of that, that supports science as an enterprise.
Right. And you draw more, I think you draw more people in at the elementary school and high school level, if you go, here's why you need to know this F equals MA stuff. I'm trying this with my sons who are both in high school, and one of them was, you know, having some problems with some of the algebra, and so I go, well, gee, this is exactly really... likes to play guitar. This is exactly what we were talking about in my class
there's
the other day.
There's actually a summer program where students go and they actually design guitars, and they talk about all the acoustics and also the way to design a guitar, and they make a guitar at the summer camp. One of the things that WIS sponsors is a club called Girls Excelling in Math and Science, and it's at a middle school here in Atlanta, Emmon Middle School, and it's with Kelly Schlegel, who's the teacher who's involved. Dr. Colatrell and myself are involved in it. And we've done a lot of hands-on stuff with these girls in middle school, and just to see them be excited about science and engineering is really exciting. But a lot of the things that we use are now readily available that weren't available when we were in high school or in middle school. A lot of the engineering societies, American Society of Mechanical Engineers and other professional societies offer these things. They've got a new thing, the science of magic, where you dissect magic tricks and see how it's related to science. We've done a lot of CSI Inman, so there are a lot of crimes that happen at the Inman Middle School, and the girls get to decide how fictional crimes.
Oh, thanks.
The girls get to choose. Who are the suspects? So of course it's the assistant principal of the school and these other teachers. And the teachers played along quite well with them. The girls made a video to describe what the crime was. We have undergraduate students who are involved with that program as well.
Well, I think the thing that's great there is you're getting kids interactive with the learning process. A number of years ago, we started this thing, let's get technology into the classroom. My own point of view is, I did a few, strictly PowerPoint or hand out the notes, and they just sit there passively and don't interact nearly as much as if you're writing on the board or they're prompting the questions and all this. And so I think if they can do something, if they can make something, it's so much better, enhances the learning process. One other kind of, and this is with having boys versus girls, sad thing to say about my gender, but we really don't care if it's good for anybody else. If it's going to kill somebody, cool. I'm being extreme here.
And studies have pointed to the importance of value to society of what you do with women.
Yeah, and men, it's absolutely much less of an issue.
Yeah.
There's a report changing the conversation.
Not me. I'm talking about Pete, basically. I don't behave that way. Pete does, though. That's what.
Point here is well taken in... surveys that have been done since the end of World War II to the present time, asking basically the same questions, of course, to a different populations. There are two consistent gender differences that have not just emerged, but appear to be sustained. And one is that men are more likely to support warfare and warring technologies. Mm-hmm. And two, women are more likely than men to support issues of the environment. Mm-hmm. And those have sustained.
Which, in my opinion, is the single most important reason to have more women involved in science and technology. There it is, the crazy liberal guy's view, but...
who lives in Cobb County? You're okay. Liberal. You're
right,
liberal for Cobb County. That's
I'm the last bastion of liberalism in Cobb County.
Yeah, just it's your local.
That's it. I said it right there. I'm just throwing that out there. If anyone disagrees with that, or agrees with it, too bad.
I mean, I think we're still the behavior characteristics of boys and girls are different, which has nothing to do with their ability to do math or science or whatever. But I mean, our kids, when you know they were little, and they absolutely wouldn't sit still. We put them in the high chair, and it's like a jailbreak thing. They're trying to get out, and you'd see somebody's girl and little girl the same age, and she's eating, and I'm going, "How do you beat them? What do you do? You know, to get them to sit there,
there it is,
and
ladies
behave?"
And gentlemen,
you know?
Parenting advice from inside the black box.
Yeah, yeah. That DVD's coming out soon. Parenting advice. Just slap them upside the head.
He did note that he doesn't have any girls, right?
Right.
He got
that
too.
Right. Okay. No, but I mean, this is, again, it's anecdotal. I haven't done a survey, but you know, girls seem to be better behaved at an earlier age in terms of following rules and all right. that than boys are.
Well, girls are rewarded for behaving, so they're socialized into that kind of behavior. But as
well,
Mary
we would have rewarded them if they had actually stayed still, but they never did. So.
Well, you know, even yesterday at a GEMS meeting where the students were told several times not to fly their airplanes around until certain times, a lot of these girls, 7th, 8th grade, couldn't resist just flying mm-hmm. it once they made it. And when we were outside, they did all the violent things that boys do, too. So
they were stomping their airplanes. Right. They were right. pulling the wings off.
Middle schoolers is what I've learned here. Mm-hmm.
There are some differences between mm-hmm. boys and girls that have been identified cross-culturally. And one of them is that girls are more verbally precocious. They talk at an earlier age, and boys are more physically aggressive than girls. But I think you can begin with these small differences, and the differences get larger over time because there may be sets of supports for the difference.
Structures.
So, exactly. Yeah. So one of the reasons that a hypothesis for why girls are more verbally precocious is that they're born with a little bit greater auditory sensitivity, so that if you talk to them when they're tiny and when they're infants, they're more likely to respond. And so, yeah, so you'll talk to them more because someone is responding to you. Well, that can get ever greater over time, so that if you're talking more to some group and it happens to be little girls compared to boys, then they're going to talk more. See, we can have small mm-hmm. differences and they can get larger because of patterns of reinforcement.
Well, there are physiological differences too.
I hope so.
Or so I've heard.
Stipulated.
No, but like with the visual system, women actually have more diversity in the photoactive molecule that receives the light and can, so they can see more colors. Essentially, physiologically, it's there. Whereas a guy, you know, those are the white socks or those are the black socks. That's all he needs to know. You know, I mean, so there are physiological differences beyond the obvious. And you know, I mean, I think these are interesting things to look at. But I think some of this behavior is reinforces by society, and some of it is you know, just there because of who we are as humans. But I know, like, my sister was really good in math and science, but she stopped, you know, as a senior. I mean, she, you know, was taking the advanced math class or whatever, but it was hurting her dating prospects, so she went the English and psychology route in college. I mean, she was very smart, and our parents weren't pushing us in any direction other than we had to go to college. But, you know, she didn't get drawn into it because part of it was this, you know, she's going to drive boys away if she's in that.
Well, what's interesting with our GEMS club is that we have a group of boys who stand longingly looking in the door mm-hmm. when we have these GEMS meetings. And actually, there's some boys who want to start GEMS for boys next year.
Guys excelling in math and science.
Right. And is it because you're doing cool science experiments and
things
like that?
Yeah, we're doing awesomely
hands-on
cool stuff that they really want to be involved in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We do see a little bit of drop-off with the 8th grade girls, partially, I mean, it's not really dating at that age, but it's mm-hmm. All the different activities that they get to choose from. But I would say that most of the boys who know about GEMS thinks it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think any of the girls really get any negative flack from their peers about being involved.
Yeah, I'm sensing that's changed.
And that's now
30 years ago. Yeah,
right. But there's still a social factor in that it can be very uncomfortable to be the only woman in the room if there's 300 people in thermodynamics, or you know, 30 people, the only woman in the room.
So before we address that topic, let me just remind our listeners that we're talking with the co-directors of the Women, Science, and Technology program here at Georgia Tech. If you've got a question or comment about women and their role in science, technology, engineering, mathematics, anything technical, or if you're a big fan of the Big Bang Theory and want to make a comment about that, give us a call here at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468. And so let's talk about that. And a lot of people call it a bias, at least if you read the New York Times article from March 21st of this year, bias called persistent hurdle for women in sciences. And when I see that, and I realize this is our fifth show in the last 4 years that we have done on the topic of women in the STEM areas, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, I say, how could you accuse us of that? But the bias is there. Now it's much more subtle than it was when your sister was deciding on her college career. But even the most subtle of biases can push someone in a different direction. And we know it was bad way back when. And in this particular article, I'm referring to comments made by Macy Jemison, a chemical engineer and the first African-American female astronaut who works with Bayer's Science Literacy Project now. When I would ask a question when she was in college, they would just look at me, why are you asking that? But when a white boy down the row would ask the very same question, they'd say, astute observation. So it was more direct back then. I think it's much more subtle now. But ironically, the study that was supported by the National Science Foundation and by the, what is it, AAUW, Association...
American Association of University Women. My mother was a member of that.
Points out that it is just a bias. It's sometimes very subtle. It starts in grade school. It persists through middle school. It's becoming less and less in college. But it's just enough for women to think along the lines of your sister to say, well, maybe I don't want to go into science or math for something silly like boys won't ask me to the, you know, graduation dance or something like that.
Right. Well, it's also important to point out the bias is not just the boys having the bias, but the male and female have these biases.
Yeah.
And
your mom saying girls don't do aeronautical engineering, something like that. Wow. That's...
Now, we do notice in the gyms club that when there are boys present, because we have let them come to a couple of the meetings, that the girls behave very differently when the boys are in the room.
And
they aren't as likely to ask questions, maybe getting to your point of this observation of the person, because they don't want to look like they're asking a stupid question in front of the boys. And also, the boys don't tend to raise their hand before they speak. They just speak out, and the girls are much likely to raise their hand.
So the whole tone of the meeting is
absolutely
different.
The tone, dynamics. The behavior. I mean, it was like craziness when we were doing snack when the boys were in the room. It was crazy.
Well, ironically, this is not much different than an April 2010 article from Education Digest that talks about a Northern Illinois University study done last year in 2009 that says this interplay is very much that way, that women tend to be a little more passive. Boys in science tend to take the lead in things like labs and this, and they have a different learning dynamic when they're together. So, wow.
Yeah.
So are we advocating gender-separated stuff? Are we?
Well, the data has shown actually that girls do much better in all-girls education.
And boys do worse
in all-male. So we could be selfish and say, sure, let's have separate sex education. Okay. And then, you know, the girls would do even better. But, you know, then you're not including the boys.
Well, another, I mean, I'm the captain of anecdote today, but my dad was a professor. He's professor emeritus from Mississippi University for Women. And part of, and that's a women's college that my mother went to, my grandmother went to, every aunt and uncle, not uncles, but all the aunts went to. And part of what, you know, you saw there, and this is from my dad talking about it, was the women had the opportunity in college to be the editor of the newspaper without having to worry about what the guys were going to say or whether or not they, you know, hurt their marriage prospects or whatever it might be. And so that was the virtue of for the women, and it was state supported, and it ended up being forced by the Supreme Court decision to integrate essentially in the late 1970s. But Mississippi being what it's in, they didn't change the name. So their men are admitted, but it's still called Mississippi University for Women. So
maybe that's a recruiting tool for men.
No, I think it's just Mississippi. Like, all right, you're going to make us do this, but we're not going to like it. But I mean, to that point, I mean, women got to excel in this environment where they didn't have that dynamic to have to worry about.
And just another reminder to our listeners, if you've got a question or comment about women and their role in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, give us a call here at the studio at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468. Is it still bad now, though? Because, Carol, you've told me things that horrified me when we were talking about our joint living learning community on the relationship of gender and humor. That, I mean, I think of these stories because I know colleagues that are now retired, and I'm sure many of you know, who are just openly biased toward women in technical fields. Most of them are retired. Not all of them.
And,
I still know a couple.
And to the female students themselves, but go ahead.
Yeah, so, but it still happens?
I think it does still happen. It happens among peers as well as among faculty that there are the occasional demeaning comments, and they may seem innocuous on the surface. I think that's what gets people, or the fact that women get noticed because they're the minority, or someone's attempting to be encouraging and even says something like, that's great, but draws attention to the gender of the person in some way. So it does happen, and female students, they need places where they can be encouraged that are comfortable and that get away from that kind of stereotypical thinking. But stereotypes abound and are all over the place, and that's what makes it very difficult sometimes. You can't control the whole environment. But what we try to do in WIST, especially in the learning community, is to offer skills for women who are already surpassing their male peers and even many of their female peers, and who have higher grade point averages and tend to be retained and who stay within their science, technology, engineering, mathematics majors. But we offer them the opportunity to reflect on their experience and to hear examples from women they may regard as role models.
So what are the important skills?
What are important skills? Almost everything. You know, I believe you should have a repertoire of as many different skills as possible. Okay. Mm-hmm. My husband frequently says he's very sorry he didn't learn to type in high school because that made it harder
to
use a computer.
My mother made me take a college course over the summer. The most valuable thing I ever did.
My mother typed my dad's dissertation in 1965, 250 or 300 pages if you mess up anywhere, you got to retype maybe five pages after
I had the computer that could correct it, but I typed my husband's thesis
You're kidding.
No. I put corrections into mine, too.
Of course. Marilyn's husband doesn't know how to use a Phillips screwdriver.
But my mother, ended up forcing me to take typing during the summer after the seventh grade. I was 12 years old taking a typing class with high school kids because she was not going to type my high school term papers or have my wife type anything.
It was like, my mom did the same
thought,
thing.
Wow, this is cool. I'm taking this high school class. I'm in the seventh grade. I didn't realize until later. It was like just for self-preservation, you know.
To return to our point about the destinies of the students and the destinies of the faculty being linked as well, faculty face problems in some of the same ways that students face problems. So in a survey of nine leading research extensive universities with high rankings, particularly in science and engineering fields, and one of the universities is Georgia Tech, the other are all leading universities that are peers to Georgia Tech, the women are significantly less likely to report that they are recognized by faculty in their own unit, and they're significantly less likely to report that the climate of their units is an inclusive climate. Students would say it a different way, but it goes to some of the same shared issues. And I think that what's operating is that people and groups can be in the same institution, they can be in the same department, they can be occupying the same space, the classrooms, the labs, the offices, they can be on the same teams with the same advisors and PIs, but it doesn't mean that their experiences are comparable. Their experiences can be different because of the kinds of factors that we're identifying.
But I think part of the thing there, too, though, is that engineering is not a group-oriented activity. And again, talking about my own, you know, time, I mean, it was lots of loner type hours, you know, all the way along the way.
It didn't used to be a group activity, but every educational pedagogy person on the planet, including Mark McGurkle, who's going to be on our program June 2nd, mm-hmm. recognize what one of his mentors calls group genius, right? Mm-hmm. And this is why we're doing this stuff with improvisation, that modern engineering, it's a very flat structure, requires everybody.
Employers want to see ability to work as a team.
But you're right, seniors, in the old days it was not. You're dating yourself, though.
I am dating myself, and the Catholic Church is very upset about that. But the Pope,
that was good.
The Pope sent me some email about that exact same subject.
Like he would notice.
Yeah, he would not notice. Since I'm not under 10, so... but, I mean, yeah, there are team activities and all that kind of stuff. And maybe, I guess that's the question. Has the engineering culture changed from this loner process?
And Mary Frank Fox, are you saying that the women's experiences, maybe they're a little outside the loop, a little isolated in this collaborative effort?
I think that's right. It isn't that all men are inside the circle and all women are outside the circle. Mm-hmm. That's just not valid. Mm-hmm. It's that women are less likely to be in the inside, at least as they report it, mm-hmm. as they perceive it, as they experience it. And we mostly know what people report and experience because the surveys are based on that.
Mm-hmm. And you also have to look at you do stuff other than lone research in your lab. There's teaching. There's committee work. And in all these interactions with your fellow faculty, there are these interactions. So in faculty meetings or in any kind of committee meetings, it's somewhat typical that a woman will say something and then a few minutes later a man will say the same thing and they'll go, "Oh, Fred, that's a great idea, you know, blah, 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 blah." And the woman's sitting there going, "Yeah, I thought it was a great idea when I said it 10 minutes ago." So one of the things that I've done, or I did kind of early on, is I would have a person that I would talk to before the committee meetings that would help me by pointing out, and he was actually a male, but he also had the same thing going on when he would stick an idea out there.
Right.
And so we would just pair it, or we would point mm-hmm. out, you know.
And as someone who's outside the circle as well,
said,
I know what you're talking
about.
That
was a good idea, then sure. my friend would say, yeah, you know, I thought it was a great idea
there.
When Mary Lynn said it 10 minutes ago. Yeah. I think y'all agree with each other. This is a great idea. And so there are some little things that you can do to help the situation with your colleagues.
Tag teaming as a skill. I'm writing that right down. I would suggest one other one. And it's one that I learned via this joint program that we did with Carol Colatrella and the WIST group when we looked at gender differences in humor. And it was very much an experiment. We had a lot of comics and improv people in there. We had a lot of female comics in there. We were winging it. But the one thing that I learned from the discussion in the audience is that something that humor is very useful for is cutting the edge on being assertive for women. And the best example I can think of was Sarah Begley, who was on our program earlier back in 2009. when she was here with Wendy, the director, the president of the local chapter of the Society of Women Engineers. And she said when someone gives her a hard time when she's on a co-op or a summer internship and it's a guy who seems a little bit biased, she just looks him square in the eye and says, listen, sweet cheeks, I need that report on my, you know, desk Monday morning. And that just cut him to the quick and boom, it was all over. I mean, that level of assertiveness is what's needed. Here's the problem. Not everyone's all that assertive. Female comedians are. They're very quick-witted. They're good at that. But the average person isn't. And maybe that's why, what Mary Frank Fox said before, you know, some of the women that serve, I'm going to use the word survive, are the ones that are
thrive.
Very kind,
thrive, not
very
survive.
Assertive.
Thrive.
Yeah, and Mary Lynn Ralph is certainly an example of that. Because I don't want to tell you, Mary, but some of my colleagues live in fear of you. I respect your honesty. I think that's a good thing, right?
It's the mace in her purse,
right.
I noticed.
And her husband, Matthew Lynn Ralph, who can't type or use a Phillips screwdriver, is a modern Renaissance man who sees that as valuable, right? And has passed that on to your daughter, for example, I think, both of you. So assertiveness. But here's the problem. You have to be more assertive and more confident than the man at the same level. So a little help to help people with that is...
Well, I think you have to be diplomatic as well. Because you can't just be aggressive and competitive and get to the top. But you have to know when to use that humor or when to use other levers to adjust the system. So I think women can be good at that because they have astute social skills. They know how to read people and listen well and...
There's a faculty in material science here at Georgia Tech who she talked to me about going to conferences. And when you go to conferences as a professional woman, a lot of times people come up and give you a hug to say hello. The guys always shake hands. They want to come up and hug you.
Oh, they give you. And
I'm
if you're the wrong conference, the men give you hugs.
I'm kind of okay with that because I don't have, you know, that's not one of my things that I'm getting out of shape about. But this particular person is not a touchy-feely kind of person anyway. And she certainly doesn't feel like these people know her well enough to hug her. And so there was this one guy who always, when he saw her at these conferences, he would try to hug her. And she tried to stick out your hand. You know, the stick out your hand real quick so they don't get too close so they can't hug you.
I do that too. That
didn't work.
I'm not a big hugger,
right? That did not work. And so what she decided to do is she went to the next conference, and when she saw him, she went up and said, oh, hey, and she gave him this big old hug. He never touched her again, ever.
Because she made the first move?
Because she made the first move, and it made him uncomfortable.
She was
and
in
then
control.
Raising awareness, he realized how she felt. Or maybe, you know,
probably,
I don't know whether he realized
it or not. It probably helped
that
she grabbed his behind in that, hug. That probably
I knew you
was,
were going to go there. I was thinking it.
Well, I'm glad I didn't name a name then.
Okay.
It's a good thing, That's always, that raises the level of discomfort enough to where it won't happen again. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so what else needs to be said about women in science and technology? Other stuff that WIST is doing?
Let's talk about wires.
Right. So we sponsor WIRES, which is Women's International Research Engineering Summit. We've held the first one last June. The next one will happen in October, either October 2010 or in July 2011. We're not exactly sure of the date. And this was a meeting where we brought together women from all over the world, 50 from the U.S., 50 from other places, to talk about not only gender issues, but to talk about how to do international collaborations.
And this was in Paris?
This was in Barcelona.
Barcelona.
So, you know, horrible setting. It was really horrible to have to go.
But I did ask one of your attendees, I said, look, did you really accomplish anything? Or was this just sitting around drinking a lot of Pinot Noir, you know, complaining about things?
Either,
she said a lot of work was done. Mm-hmm. Apparently not as much wine was consumed
as I
thought.
Yeah, it was either there or Detroit. It flipped a coin.
We couldn't decide. Actually, we're going to be in Orlando at the next one.
So we're going to flip-flop back and forth.
U.S. and somewhere else. Right. But it was interesting that these women, even before the conference started, we had put a network together online. And there was actually a group that said, a person said, hey, there's this proposal. It's due before the conference, but does anybody want to work on it?
Right.
And an international collaborative group was put together before the conference. It was a person in the U.S. who had initiated it. Well, about a week later, again before the conference, somebody from China said, oh, well, we have this proposal that I want to work in. Does anybody want to work with that? And so before we even met in Barcelona, there were two proposals that were put together by these networks of women Because one of the things that we did is we did some research along with the conference itself. And one of the things about international research for men and women is finding the right collaborators. Mm-hmm. And they rate that higher than getting the money to do it, is finding the right people to work with.
I think Bill and I couldn't mm-hmm. agree more yeah. with that. The project is doomed if you don't find the right.
So with the same theme well of building expertise. Networks of women, you know, middle schoolers, Georgia Tech students, faculty, and now we've taken a step further, international networks of women mm-hmm. To try to advance women. And so that's one of the things that we're working on.
So is that one of these skills, right? Because a lot of studies have pointed to the fact that men are used to this social networking, and that networking for business or collaborations was so gender biased. That back in the 60s, when my father was in sales and trucking, he said it was very routine for sales meetings to occur at strip clubs. Right? You wouldn't hear that now. That's how biased it was. So is networking a skill that's improving among women? They're taking advantage of it with this WIRES?
I think building program? The clarity of what the process is. How do you get the money? Where do I apply for the money? Where can I meet collaborators? A lot of the thing has to do with clarity, which is, you know, this old, if you have a so-called old boys network and it's not clear exactly how the deals get done, then the women don't do well in that because they don't know how the deals got done. So I think there were...
Good point.
I wanted to applaud Mary Lynn because she did notice that the mechanism was needed to get women together, both the electronic mechanism and having the meeting itself. And right. So she's really pushing the envelope there to develop such a mechanism. And when you first started talking about this with the National Science Foundation, their first question was, is there really a need for this? Is there really something that needs to help women along?
I think that WIRES is an emblematic success of the WISC initiative because it takes something that we are recognizing as being important, not just collaboration, but increasingly global, international collaboration, recognizing that women may be a little less likely than men to have some of the informal means of learning that, which mm-hmm. goes to your issue of access to broad networking. And so, therefore, making it a programmatic concern, actually having an initiative that's designed around something that may usually be informal, introducing a little bit of formality to the extent that it's programmatic, and therefore opening up the information, the exchange, the knowledge, and success.
So one of the things with this conference is usually most conferences, you're there to exchange technical information and hope to make some networks, to make some projects together. We changed the focus. So the focus of this was on making connections to have collaborations happen. And the exchange of technical information was kind of not the focus. So mm-hmm. our poster session, instead of describing one project, which is what traditionally happens at a poster session, it was more like a Facebook page. So here is this person. Mm-hmm. Here's their background. Here's their research interest. Here's results from three or
all
so.
All the stuff they're working all on the stuff they're working work on.
Not yeah. only that, here's the toys I have. Here is the equipment that I have. Here's what sorts of things I can do. And also, here's the type of collaborators that I want to work with. So my students break things. Right. So we don't usually make the things we break, and we don't usually design the algorithms to solve the models that we come up with.
And by this, she means pulling on polymer samples. At MIT, we call them snappers. Were you a snapper at MIT?
Yes, I was a snapper.
But she's not breaking equipment for the fun of it.
No. We're breaking things like polymers with nanotubes in them.
Exactly, to see how strong they are and toughness
and try to design them to behave the way you want them to behave. Wow. So
I would claim that this is an example of a benefit for everyone. So before you realize, I think you were talking about the openness, the transparency of the process, benefits anyone that's not in the inner circle, right? So that benefits non-traditional people like me, more women than men, because as you say, women are less likely to be in that inner circle. And you referred to the good old boys club. And I will say this, that compared to government and lobbyists and business, science is much more open, but we still have a good old boys club, or what my colleague Mary Rizak, who's at Kansas State, used to call the big bellies.
Well, the other thing to point out is that the good old boys club doesn't have a lot of the boys in it. I mean, it's not an all-in. It's called the Good Old Boys Club because it's not inclusive of all the boys, even. So,
and Bill and I take a lot of people off, so there are many cases where we're not in that.
So the other thing that it's you know, I think it'd be a good offspring of this. We're dealing with a situation in electrical engineering. We're in 7 different buildings, and so the social networking is very deficient. I mean, there are a lot of great things we could do, but you never see your colleagues. We've got 110 faculty. Couldn't pick them out of a police lineup. Something like this would really help just our faculty get to know each other and what they're doing, and I'll just throw that out there.
It also makes people look at their career and look at what they really do. To try to put together a Facebook-type poster, mm-hmm. you have to say, okay, what is it really what really is my expertise? Who would I really work with if I could choose anyone to work with? What mm-hmm. sort of skills do those people need mm-hmm. to have or whatever?
Right. I top that off by saying it's great for scientific capacity. Mm-hmm. It's great for the scientific capacity of the nation. As you do this globally, it's great for the scientific capacity of the world. Mm-hmm. And so it's about progress.
Right.
So maybe that's a good point to get to the final portion of the show that we like to call What Have We Learned? So let me see if I can summarize some of this, and people feel free to chime in, add, correct me as we go along. What we've learned about is this wonderful program at Georgia Tech called Women, Science, and Technology. The fact that it addresses faculty and students, research and education, because where the students go or where the faculty go, that's really where the students go. So both are extremely important. Probably the latest initiative they have is this WIRES program. What is it? Women's International Research Summit, where you try to, I guess, increase the networking part of research, where you look for the kinds of people that might complement what you're doing, not necessarily what a lot of technical meetings are, which is, here's what I'm doing, what are you doing? Here's what I'm doing, what are you doing? Which isn't all that useful. And we would claim that some of these activities, like WIRES, benefits everyone, every group, not just women, but anyone that's longing for a little more transparency in what's going on in terms of science, technology, engineering, mathematics. WIST always has associated with it the Living Learning Community, which I'm a big fan of because we have one on human innovation, and I think we've learned a lot from our joint work with them. And WIST teaches women important skills, right, to help them accomplish these things. I would claim that being assertive is one of them, but being a guy, just sort of getting out there, well, let's be assertive. That's the key. It's not just assertive. It's assertive and diplomatic, right, that there are certain subtle social skills like doing the hug first to let someone know that maybe if you only hug women and shake hands with men, that, you know, maybe that makes some people feel uncomfortable, just as an example.
And the use of the hands is a good way to ward off that happening again.
I like that. I mean, so I can't believe just that
make
that
a note
didn't
on
work.
That. Yeah.
And basically what the literature says is we've made big headways, at least with this 2010 report that was sponsored by NSF said, we've made a lot of headway, but there's still a good way to go. And I would claim that's in the upper echelons, that's in faculty and administrators, because here at Georgia Tech, more than 50% of the women that are undergraduate chemistry majors, or that are more than 50% of the undergraduate chemistry majors are women. Similarly, in bioengineering and biology, very, very good. But the reason we still have this bias is the bias may be subtle, but a subtle bias has a big effect. And the best example of this, when I was doing my research, and I wish I remembered the name of the woman who wrote the letter to the editor of the New York Times, she read this article in the New York Times from the 21st and said that, you know, I was always aware of this and I wasn't the least bit surprised by the conclusions of this study and this article, because I told my daughter several times, I would just sneak in a conversation, that women, she thinks, are much better at math than men, and now she's finishing her PhD in mathematics. So that little bit of suggestion, that little bit of bias makes a huge difference. And hopefully that's the one thing WIST is going to continue to overcome, along with the other great activities they're doing. Anything else? What have we left out?
I think you summarized it all.
Well, you do, but let's ask our guests. What are we missing? Right, yeah. Aside from bashing Marilyn's husband, we apologize to Matthew.
I love my husband. We'll be married 19 years this year.
Oh, congratulations. Wow. Right?
June 1st.
Right, and it seems to have worked for you.
It does.
I guess he's the final wonderful thing I'm going to say is...
She'll let him out of the basement soon. He's chained up down there.
The bias works both ways. So that a lot of guys, you know, you mentioned your sister that, okay, mm-hmm. she doesn't want to be too smart and smarter than men because mm-hmm. that will ruin her marriage right. prospects.
Was the times.
But men yeah. being stay-at-home moms and being the primary caregiver, I know an accountant who goes to... He's actually involved in Cub Scouts. That's how I actually met him. Who is the primary caregiver, stay-at-home mom... He takes a lot of grief for doing that. I mean, this
well,
is a very
well.
There's
a lot of support groups for
yeah,
the men.
Absolutely, yeah. I think he's terrific.
You know, there's
actually.
Mothers morning out, not
yeah, I would,
yeah.
caregivers morning out.
Yeah, yeah, and I've been in there singing the songs at Gymboree, and when you're one of the only guys, it's tough. So maybe we soon, now that more women are going to college than men, we're going to have to start thinking about this down the road. Mm-hmm. But. Ladies, thank you very much for being on the
program.
Thank
you. Thanks for the opportunity.
And just a reminder, next week, the title of our show will be Speech Synthesis from Darth Vader to Princess Leia. We'll be talking with Professor Emeritus from the School of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Georgia Tech, Tom Barnwell, mm-hmm. who will go through the history of all this
speech
sorts
census.
Of stuff.
Yeah.
Bill, are you doing anything? Are you playing music at Caverna Coffee? Anything coming up?
No, that was last Sunday night.
Right,
thanks
you gotta
for
let me
asking.
Know what's going on. Yeah. Wherever Bill might be out in public showing his hair gel coated face, you can see him there. I'm actually going to be at Comedy in the Burbs at Spud's Tavern up in Roswell, Georgia. You can find this information on our website as well. If you've got a question or comment about this program or a suggestion for a future program here on Inside the Black Box, by all means, send us an email at comments@insidetheblackbox.org. Our chief engineer is Trent Altman. Our theme music is composed and performed by Bill and Mary Hunt. And we are a production of the WREK Studios here on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology. Please join us next week for Inside the Black Box, Science Only Funnier.